All right. Well, with that, I think we're ready to officially start.
Wait, hold on. I need to remember what I was going to say.
You can make it up as we go.
Whenever I record anything.
Awesome.
You can make it up as we go. This is just. We just roll. Vile, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, no, good.
He's just enjoying the vibe.
Vile's out.
I'm sure. All right. Well, hello and welcome somewhere in here to episode 4 of the Provisional Nerf News Network podcast. I'm KT. I'm here with my co-hosts, Vile Mods and JoltKing627. Today is Wednesday, the 22nd, that we're recording, a day earlier than usual. So if anything big happens on Thursday or Friday and we don't report on it, don't yell at us because it's Wednesday. Episode will be out in a couple days, and this will be out the day after that. And we are extremely excited for the first time on this podcast to have a guest. We have with us Taffy of Caramel Designs. Hello, Taffy.
Welcome to This Week in Nerf, your source for first-party, third-party, and community Nerf news. I'm your host, Taffy Caramel, and I'm going to miss Foam Blast. I'm going to miss him a lot. I already bought almost all of the remaining Dauntless jerseys. Actually, there's one left. I just wasn't about to spend
loving
$60.
Tribute. I wanted to buy a Dauntless jersey too, but there were none that were like anywhere near a size that I would be able to do anything with, unfortunately.
There were three extra small ones left, and I bought two of them.
Oh, that's delightful.
Sorry.
We'll talk about this later, but I got some of the stickers of your art that is a part of that show, which I'm really excited about.
I have a stack of those.
Sweet. Oh, yeah. Well, maybe you can send me more.
Anybody who doesn't know who I am, I designed the skewer. I also actually drew the cute little car that you see in the intro of This Week in Nerf. That was my doing.
I love it so much.
If you don't know who I am, you've probably seen my work somewhere, even if you don't realize it.
Yep. If you watch my video, this is KT of Family Foam Sport. I didn't say that. I would just like blaze right through it. If you watch my videos, you definitely saw my video on the skewer, and I gushed about the designer Taffy. This is Taffy. So
I cried when you got to the part where it inspired your children.
Okay, we're going to dig in on this later, but we got a bunch of topics to get through this week. But I should also check in with my regular co-hosts. Vile, what you got going on this week?
We'll dig into it later again, but I have been helping out with Foam Blast closing up shop. But as
That's
well,
right. All roads know, lead back to Foam Blast, apparently.
all roads do. And modding as usual. It's kind of how
I think
going.
We have our title.
All roads lead to Foam Blast. Oh, that's pretty good. I'm writing that down right now. And Jolt, what are you up to right now?
Just the usual tinkering around.
Fair enough.
Saturday, Vile and I did a messenger build off.
That's right.
Oh, that's I saw something about that, but I haven't seen the results.
I still need to finish up a little bit of stuff on mine, but yes.
Oh, are you maybe like 12%?
So, I will give Vile credit. He may have taken several more hours than I did to do my thing, but we already knew that was going to happen. But he did almost finish the entire project. He got it fired.
Incredible. This is a rare. For anyone who's not regularly hanging out in Vile streams, first of all, what's your problem? Second of all, running joke that Vile gets about.
I don't have time for that.
But you think I do? I do it anyway. Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. There's a running joke that Vile gets about 12% through all of his projects.
I get 12% of the daily required amount of sleep. This is not funny.
Oh, it's all good. Listen, I'm a parent of two. We can talk about not being able to get enough sleep all day if we want.
I'm a parent of none.
You're a parent of at least two major released blaster designs, which is why we're really excited to have you this particular week. We're going to talk about this later. It was on the show, but the red herring is now out. And that's...
Oh, yeah, I did
Taffy's,
do that.
That's, you did do that.
Yes.
And so that is, that's Taffy's
this?
New
This was literally
release.
This week,
so
Taffy.
It was sitting behind the couch because I accidentally dropped it.
Fair enough.
So I forgot about it.
Okay, so but for the time being, let's go ahead and start digging into some of the other stuff going on. And we're going to kind of jump right in with sort of a weird non sequitur because Nerf just canceled Nerf Ultimate... Nerf Ultimate Champion, which is a VR Nerf game that has not been out that long, right? Wasn't it announced in like 2021? I think
it was fairly
Joel,
recent.
You did the thing on this. Do you remember?
I don't think it made it out of beta that long ago.
2022. Maybe I'm thinking about the other one. What was the other Nerf game that was really bad?
It was the one where you had to collect all the Nerfium, and there were robots, and I know I watched Brett play it.
Oh,
and
that one. I was do you have any idea how little that narrows it down, KT?
Nerf. Well, see, but there are a lot of Nerf games.
Tube of Nerfening. We're just going to call it that.
I do like that better. I'm fairly sure that's a better name than whatever it actually was. But that game was so poorly reviewed everywhere. In addition to, like, outside of the Nerf community, it was just so poorly reviewed that it was pretty short-lived. But it sounds like Nerf Ultimate Champion was actually good. But I'm curious to know what y'all's thoughts are. We reported last episode on Hasbro sort of refocusing a lot of their stuff, and I have a feeling ultimately they canceled this project because they're just trying not to do media production. They're trying to just do toy production.
So I have very fond memories of Skullmaster, one of the moderators on the r/Nerf Discord. They like to unwind from work by going home and putting on their VR headset and then just absolutely demolishing children in this game. And it is hilarious to watch. He just posts these videos. You can hear children like screaming and crying in the background.
God.
It's screaming like Call of Duty levels. I'm going to F your mom.
Incredible.
It sounds like
it
Skull,
brings
right?
tears to my eyes.
Well, and one of the fun things, right? Because what we... Oh, Nerf Legends, by the way, is what the program... is what the game was called.
That's what it was.
Legendary
Skull
failure.
Skull also play that in... Skull would also demolish children in that.
Yeah,
except
if you could get it to work.
The online lobbies in there were so... The online lobbies in Nerf... Nerf Legends, I almost already forgot the name. Were so freaking barren. Like, I think it would get booted out because it couldn't make even a single match.
That's incredible. I mean, it just sounds like the game... Like, even if you get into the match, your chances of finishing it without the game crashing are pretty slim.
The name is almost as forgettable as the game itself.
Skull versus a singular 12-year-old. It would be hilarious to
watch.
We
do still have Roblox Foam FPS. To be fair, I have played none of these games. Not because I like don't play games or whatever. I don't know. I haven't come into that culture yet. Joel, you've played some Foam FPS, right?
I play Foam FPS. I think I'm level 80 something in the game.
All right.
I've spent way too many hours playing that game. More recently with Grimms, our co-host on the news show. It's a lot of fun. It's jank, but in a good way. It's really wholesome.
I mean,
love it.
Well, anyway, yeah, it sounds like Nerf Ultimate Champion is an actual loss, which is kind of a bummer. But also, I don't own a VR headset, I'm not.
This is the biggest loss since when they kind of screwed up the other Roblox game, the one that was actually officially like Nerf sponsored, which was Nerf Strike.
Nerf Island, right?
No, not Nerf Island, Nerf Strike. This was a game on Roblox.
Nerf Island,
yes. What the hell?
I think Nerf Island, I guess, is like the like Nerf like place to visit in Roblox, but then Nerf Strike is the actual game.
Yeah, Nerf Strike was like a thing, but they were actually sponsored by Hasbro, at least in a way that got them the models of the actual blasters and the name.
Right.
It was a fairly
like the
decent...
models were hyper realistic. They did not match up with anything.
Because Foam, I know that Foam FPS was forced to change their name.
They were, and this is
when
part
that
of
started.
Why.
Yeah,
it's a real shame too, because it was, as far as I know, was much superior to Nerf Strike.
Yeah,
actually, I will say Nerf Strike before they updated it into the ground was an amazing game. I grinded that game for a long time when it first came out, because what it did differently to Foam FPS was Foam FPS is single hit tag. Nerf Strike was not. They made it so that you could get hit multiple times. So if you're getting shot at from behind, you don't just instantly die. You have a chance to turn around and fire back and possibly defeat your enemy. And it was a lot of fun for that.
Now, I'd argue that single hit tags, while not everyone's cup of tea, could be better, because that's how it goes out in real world Nerf. And I remember when like most of the r/Nerf Discord was playing in a giant lobby because we couldn't go to games. It was around when the lockdowns happened.
I mean, there's an argument for it.
It was a way to spend time
with
each other.
I think the main thing is, in Roblox, you get a lot of 12-year-olds spawn camping you. So what would happen is you'd spawn in a very busy lobby, and you'd instantly be shot from behind because you can't see anything.
Yeah, that doesn't usually happen during regular games.
Yeah.
Or when it does, it's very easy to take people out.
Yeah. So, but then, of course, in Nerf Strike, one day they decided to update that so that everything was one-hit tag, including the turrets, because they had the Vulcan in the game as a placeable turret.
Oh my god.
Literally every...
They had placeable turrets? What the hell?
Yeah, they had placeable turrets. I mean, this was a freaking cool game. It was amazing.
I mean, this really ties into our conversations from last episode about what... Or last episode? Episode before? I don't know. Recent conversations about what really makes the Nerf hobby different from Airsoft, from Paintball, from Gelball. Like, the fundamental differences of the physics of the thing that we do... Because, you know, airball, gelball, they're all generally like full auto blasters. Most video game FPS games are mimicking real firearms. And so the gameplay style is very different. And so when you're trying to make a Nerf game, does it make sense? Because like if you're really trying to emulate the experience of going to a Nerf game, when you get tagged, it should just be that like now you can't use your blaster and you're only allowed to walk back to your base. And you have to walk back to your base in real time. And then you have to wait for a timer and then you can play again. Like that would be a more accurate representation of what actually happens in the Nerf game. But I don't know that that's really the best thing to do. Like, really what Nerf Strike and, God, Nerf Legends, like, they're just other first-person shooters, but you're holding Nerf blasters, right?
Essentially,
like,
yes.
In Legends, you weren't even shooting darts.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah, in Legends, you're shooting... I don't know what you're shooting.
They're all like energy weapons.
The Ultra 2... The Ultra 2 in Nerf Legends, I believe it is a break action revolver.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
They made the Ultra 2 a break action.
A bunch of them didn't even work like the real blasters.
It gets even better. The Ultra 2 does not shoot out of its actual muzzle. I think it shoots out of the top, which is where the batteries are.
I believe it. Vile, here's your new project. You need to start modding blasters to function the way that they do in Nerf Legends.
Oh, that's tough.
Gotta do it for
Nerf Strike
2.
You should do the Bulldog. The Bulldog would be hilarious to see because it was like this three-round burst thing.
I would have to look.
It was insane.
I'd have to look at what it is. Because I'm curious. I'm just going
to
look up a YouTube video about how.
Just start with a break action Ultra 2 and go from there.
Break action Ultra 2.
You could probably just buy it. It's almost definitely on clearance for like 50 cents or something. Because it's sold so freaking poorly.
I've got so many, I don't even want to get it. I have more than enough. I'm going to say it right now. I have more than enough to probably.
I'm not saying you have to play the game. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No,
if you ever run out of ideas for projects, if you ever run out of ideas for projects to complete to 12%, there's some suggestions.
I'm trying to finish projects, not make new ones.
Vile, that is the biggest lie you've ever told on the podcast. I'm sorry.
The only reason I suggest you buy it on clearance instead of buying at full price is that this game retailed for like $60. That is insane. Also, please don't bleep that part out because like that is this game actually retailed for $60.
That is a little wild.
Yeah. No,
it was never a $60 game
for that money.
For a buggy pile of megalovania. That part you should bleep out.
Moving on, because we could probably dig into Nerf video games forever, but we're going to lose a lot of people.
We haven't even talked about the mobile games.
We can just make a podcast just about Nerf video games.
Nerf
we can go back to those
pranks.
PlayStation ones. Yeah. Oh God,
which isn't
Nerf
even Nerf
okay,
anymore.
Anyway,
they took away
anyway,
the branding.
Anyway, staying in the realm of official Hasbro Nerf stuff. Maybe Nerf maybe lost the last person who could potentially sell people on Nerf Legends because Sophie Lightning is no longer chief TikTok officer at Nerf. Apparently, of the beginning of the year. Wait, did you not know this?
No, I don't keep up with any of these things because I only get 12% the normal amount of sleep. I'm kidding, that's a joke.
Sophie Lightning has been chief TikTok officer, what do you say, Joel, for like 2 years now?
I think so, two or three.
Yeah, and
that sounds about right.
And yeah, her last video with them was on December 27th, 2022. And since then, it's just been all the like trick shot guys and something else. I don't know. None of it's interesting, really.
Was she fired? Was she let go?
I think the contract
expired?
So she did a TikTok on the Nerfers 101 Sophie Lightning channel and you know, just said that it was kind of over. I have a feeling it was just an expiring contract. That would be
my guess, yeah.
Yeah, she may be under some kind of NDA or something, not to talk about the details of it. But she apparently is moving on to be chief TikTok officer for a cooking-related brand. She has like three channels that she's in charge of now. So it's nice to know that there is upward mobility in the Nerf media world, that the possibility to get a real...
That she's like the chief TikTok officer now of Buzzbee.
I know, right? Yeah, yeah. Dart Zone poached her.
Imagine if Buzzbee had a TikTok.
I would love for Buzzbee to have a TikTok.
If I remember correctly.
There was a knockoff Buzzbee TikTok. There was someone just like tried to steal the name. It wasn't actually Buzzbee. A lot of people followed it hoping it was actually Buzzbee, and it was not.
It was not Buzzbee. It was Wiz Wasp.
Exactly.
Wiz Wasp Trinkets.
Buzzbee from Wish.com.
Get yours today.
Wish Wasp.
Come on down to Wiz Wasp Trinkets for your good times, party times stuff.
Only full size grips.
We have the Chamomile
here.
Designs Skinner.
Chamomile Designs.
The Chamomile
fabulous.
Designs. No, the Chamomile Desserts. Skinner.
Chamomile Desserts. I mean, that sounds like you film. Also can start a cooking related business on the side.
It sounds like a horror film.
Okay, but here's what I really want to know, and seeing as we have TikTok's new big Nerf star here in the podcast.
Shut up, KT.
I'm pretty embedded in TikTok at this point, and Jolt's been doing it. I don't know what kind of exposure you have to Nerf TikTok, if any.
Do, 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 do. I just wanted to do that because I thought that would be funny. Please put like the actual thing on there.
I'm just gonna play it on recorder every time.
Yes.
That's what I'm gonna do.
No, I want to hear the actual thing because it has even more impact. You can throw it a recorder in sometimes, but like you have to use the actual Megalovania at some point.
I'll consider
it. Have your automaton sing along to it or whatever.
But for real, what kind of exposure do you have to Nerf TikTok, Taffy?
I know Brett tried to apply, and then
that's right,
he lost.
Brett did not make the Nerf. Yeah, well, but like in general, sort of Nerf, because like Nerf TikTok culture is pretty separate and different from like Nerf YouTube culture. Nerf YouTube culture is definitely more of the hobby. Nerf TikTok culture speaks a little bit more to the public. And so I know that...
Let me take a breath and stop screaming because my medication has been wearing off.
Oh,
the
goodness.
ADHD stuff. So my problem with TikTok, just like in general, Nerf or not, is that with the ADHD, having a constant stream of these short bursts of intense novelty is horrible. If I were to get on TikTok, I would lose hours of my day and just never ever recover. So I try to stay as far away from that stuff as possible.
And I don't blame you. I gotta be honest.
That is to say, I do not have much experience.
And that is the audience that we're often trying to reach on TikTok, is people who are currently losing most of their day. I know that in my experience, my most popular videos are ones where instead of talking about one blaster at length, in fact, I put my 1 minute reviews on TikTok, but they do not perform well. They never have. The videos that always perform well, the videos I have that have like, I have one video with over 1 million views, and it's one where I went through and quickly showed every blaster that could conceivably be called a quote unquote sniper, either because of its form factor or because of a high power level. Sniper. Mm-hmm. And I go through a ton of them in fast succession. Those are the videos that do the most best on TikTok. Other than like I did the Gjallarhorn recently, which is just like hyped because it's new and weird.
And it makes sense that does the best because it's this constant nonstop stream of boom, something new, boom,
exactly.
Something new, boom,
exactly.
Something new and exciting, boom, something new.
Exactly.
That is what your brain craves.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of wondering, it's interesting, because I don't feel like Sophie's content was even in that realm. She did a lot of stuff that was more skit oriented, which also does pretty well on TikTok. I remember
one of her skits that involved Murph. Shout outs to Murph, you're fantastic. Where I think she was, I don't remember anything except for this one part where she ran out of darts or something. Not the person, like the actual out of darts. Mm-hmm. And like she looks at Murph, and then she holds up a pair of clippers. And then Murph starts running away. Like, I saw that and I was like,
oh, that sounds hilarious.
What the fuck did I just watch?
I mean, that's pretty good.
Like, you can shave Murph?
You know what, though? So I made a TikTok about this, conveniently. I think that Murph actually worked similar to the Legolo, the hunters in Halo, where they're actually
I have not played Halo.
They're in Halo, the hunters are like these big enemies that you encounter for the first time, like a couple levels into the game. And they have a weak spot, but they're just like huge and they're armored. And if you look at their skin, it's all like ripply. And it turns out in universe, they're actually a sentient colony of worms. And so individual worms on their own are not intelligent enough to do anything, but when you get a large enough mass of them together. So I think Murph is actually what happens if you leave too many elite darts in one place at a time, is they eventually gather in a large enough quantity to become sentient and become a Murph.
See, eventually what I want to see is somebody making an HVZ campaign or even a Nerf tabletop campaign where the apocalypse has happened. Hasbro did some kind of crazy, batshit insane thing to make more money. And then the dart apocalypse happened. You get touched by this Murph blob, you just get absorbed. And, like, the only thing you can do to survive is blaster-related stuff. Like, imagine ransacking a post-apocalyptic... post-apocalyptic out-of-darts warehouse for supplies. Like, that would be a pretty fantastic campaign, if you ask me.
That would be a good campaign. I do like when they do, like, ammo drops, when they do, whose was I just reading? I think it was a past Gator HVZ event where you weren't allowed to bring your own ammo at all. You had to find all, they would provide ammo, but you had to, like, earn it in order to have it.
You know what I just realized would also be pretty cool? If in this abandoned out-of-darts warehouse... you have to defeat a monster that is made out of rival rounds, but once you defeat it, your entire group, or at least you get at least one proton pack as boss loot from this. Like, that would just be a fantastic freaking campaign.
That would
Wouldn't
be really
mean
fun.
That you're
I like
just
that
using the dead body of the boss you defeated as ammo.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, it would fit the whole post-apocalyptic theme.
That is so, precisely
like, I'm imagining
what
something
means.
That's not like aggressively edgy and gritty, but like, come on, this would be pretty cool.
It's playful, edgy, and
that
gritty.
Kind of gritty.
It's playful, edgy,
and gritty.
It's
playfully fucked up.
I mean, in Elder Scrolls, you wore dragon bone armor. Come on. You're literally wearing the armor of your enemy.
speaking of gritty, actually, gritty versus Murph would be a really interesting event, I think.
I like that one.
I know who Foam Blast Michelle is going to be rooting for if that ever happens.
Right? That's true. That's very true. Michelle is
on
a big,
the subject of
big
Murph,
gritty fan.
Is Murph still there? Is Murph still relevant? I don't keep up with most of the stuff.
Murph is still being used. I'm definitely
still
seeing
mascot.
Murph. I feel like I just saw a new TikTok that involved Murph on the
I
Nerf
went to the car
channel.
Wash. I drove past the car wash a while ago. I saw one of Murph's cousins.
Murph does kind of look like that.
I'm sure.
Like he was even the same colors and everything. He was a little taller and a little more skinny and cylindrical, though. Anyways,
all right. Here's my real question: as I attempt to segue into the next topic, if the other major foam companies had mascots, what do you think they would be? What would the Busby mascot
look
like?
I think Luke is already the mascot of his own company.
Yes.
You just need to put the backpack on.
Well, I'm mostly thinking about the larger manufacturing companies, not the hobby companies.
Oh.
So what would a Dart Zone mascot look like? What would a Busby mascot look like? I mean, I guess a Busby mascot would probably be a bee, but that feels boring.
It would be a bee with non-human hands.
I was about to make that joke.
And then we would know where the grips come from. Yes, I love that.
We can segue into our sponsor
here,
NordVPN.
Oh my god,
we're Linus Tech Tips. Linus Tech Tips now, and you can't do anything about it.
Who here has listened to the Dart? Listened to or watched the Dart Zone podcast? Blaster.
I got
talk,
an email about
chat.
Your Dart Zone Vault thing.
The Dart Zone Vault, yes. Dart Zone Vault. I am also signed up for it. I know Vile signed up for it. But I mean, it's literally just an email list. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, they're calling it the Dart Zone Vault, and it's obviously intended as a separate way to speak to the more serious hobbyists without blending that with their sort of day-to-day mass market marketing, which I think the podcast also represents that. Because, I mean, the podcast was largely just a marketing thing,
what else would it be?
Well, isn't it all just marketing?
A lot of it was them talking about their experiences at the company and like the stuff they're working on. Like, they just like recapped what they did in the previous year and talked about what they're looking forward to in the next year. But there were two.
Did you get to hear from any of the engineers? Of course, I asked that.
Not yet. I'm hopeful that they'll start bringing on other guests from within the company. This was only the first episode. It's just two people. People who have been at, Brett did a really good video on it and like knew who the people were in more detail because he's seen them at events and stuff. So it's Brennan and Brian, and neither of them are engineers. They're both, I know that Brennan is specifically marketing focused. He's the guy that said no bullshit marketing, I think, in the first couple of ads that said that.
Oh, dude, that guy.
Yeah.
That dude.
Yep, that so guy. He's one of the guys on the podcast.
He seemed like he was really happy to say that, or he was either really
yeah,
good at
right?
I would have been really happy, just like a genuine smile to get to say that on
oh, absolutely.
An ad. Like,
he probably
come
had
on,
to really.
I would just be all giddy about
he
that.
Probably had to really convince his boss that it was okay to say that and was just super pumped that he won that conversation.
Right. And they even got to censor it with the Dart Zone logo.
Yes, that's pretty good. Okay, but there's two specific things that I caught in this podcast episode, and I may insert audio clips of them in here, but I don't have them prepared to play for you. But one of them was, at one point, they were talking about their favorite blasters of the last recent... No. But one of the things that came up was, Brennan mentioned, he said something like, you know, sometimes you have a product that you like, but you have to move on from it because whatever, like something happens and you have to move on from it. And specifically mentioned the Adventure Force Conquest Pro. This is the first time, I think, that I've heard someone in Dart Zone marketing, basically it sounds like, admit that a product got like canceled earlier, like before its life cycle was over. That's what it sounds like to me.
I will say the Conquest has been on shelves a lot like less time than it should have been. If you look at the lifespan of the Aeon Pro and the Nexus Pro on shelves, you can still get the Aeon Pro and the Nexus, but the Conquest has been on clearance.
He specifically mentioned as opposed to the Nexus and the Aeon.
So, okay, my input as a designer, because this is the sort of thing that I do and understand. The Conquest was a fantastic design on paper, and when they work, they are just amazing. Slamfire in a blaster that does something unique is just there's nothing else like it, but those things jam like nothing else. And the worst part is they don't just jam because of the way these things feed with an arm, you know, pushing a dart into a little spinny thing. There is the potential for darts to get caught not in accessible places. Like, you actually have to take the blaster apart to unjam it sometimes.
I've actually
it
never had
that
mine jam, surprisingly.
I can totally see why they might be retiring it early.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool.
Well, it sounds like it's retired.
Poor
like
sales and possibly poor PR as a result of the, you
right.
know, all the jams.
Right.
It makes sense.
It's well, then plus, clearance enough for me to have gotten my pair of them for $1 each.
Holy crap.
Well, and plus that blaster goes through the relationship with Walmart. Like, they don't get to just decide to put it on shelves. Walmart has to be like, yes, we will continue to buy Conquest Pros, but if they're getting a ton of returns on it, they're going to come back to Dart Zone and be like, stop sending us this.
You would be surprised how much of an impact that stores actually do have on this.
Oh, like, I'm sure.
I was going to say, there is something, though, that's rather interesting. The Conquest shares the same kind of mechanism in it and loading and stuff like that as the Dictator from Target, which is obviously, you know, Target's variant of it. But the one difference that is between these two blasters especially is that the Dictator actually has stock. The Conquest was a very kind of run-and-gun type of blaster. Obviously, it had the Slamfire, but no stock kind of made it look weird. It looked like, it, you know, compared even to the Aeon Pro, you can even still do a stock or use it as like a top prime, like most pistols or Nerf variant blasters of some kind, like Retaliator or something like that. And a lot of people had, you know, pump action kits and all kinds of stuff, the carbine kits for the Aeon Pro. But the Conquest was kind of a really weird blaster. And for the space that the Aeon, Nexus, and Conquest live in, you know, that higher FPS range, it's more of a gimmick blaster than it really was, I think, kind of viable for what its you know, FPS ranges were, what I think it was kind of being marketed towards. It's more of the gimmick version of that. Even the Dictator with a stock is still more viable than the Conquest Pro. It's not necessarily, and kind of like Taffy saying on the design aspect, design and on paper, it sounds like a really cool thing, but in potentially game stuff like this, you know, jamming possibly bad, not having, it's like I said, run and gun can be done with just about anything else in a much more comfortable fashion. It was just a very strange blaster to begin with. So maybe it didn't do well on sales because it's definitely into the hobby range of like what we do, you know, especially people who are doing like CQB or Park Wars or whatever, you know, maybe it just didn't really sit well with the community. I mean, I don't know many people who actually, I mean, obviously besides like a lot of us, a lot of us have picked one up, but I don't know people who ran.
I passed on it multiple times. I just finally got a Dictator. I haven't stress tested mine yet. But does it tend to jam in the same way? And I don't know.
From what I've experienced, it does not actually.
I think
I've seen
that
more
they
people running Dictators than I have Conquests.
May I say something here?
Yeah, please.
I think they may have changed something with the Dictator.
Yeah.
And with later versions of the Conquest, because I know they must have changed quality control, because mine had spring rattle, which most other people's didn't.
Mm.
So, and here's the thing. Neither of mine jam, ever. And I've put a lot of rounds through mine. I love those things.
You said you have Conquests or Dictators?
I have two Conquests and a Dictator. None of them have jammed.
So, yeah, given the nature of that blaster, it has almost definitely gone through at least one revision, given that with that feed system.
Almost certainly.
I'm also just going to go out on the record and say that I did have to run a Conquest at one of my wars, and it worked a few times, and then it jammed, and I had to run back into the staging area, grab a different blaster, and then run back out.
Yikes.
I have used a Conquest Pro at a park war. I didn't hit anybody, but that's normal for me. But it was a lot of fun to use.
The last thing on the Dart Zone podcast that I really wanted to talk about was another claim from Brennan that Dart Zone actually really loves leaks. They love when their stuff is leaked in advance.
I think
y'all think that's
that.
True.
I'm gonna break NDA here and just go on record and say they're paying utter travesty $15 bajillion per leap year to leak things prematurely. Sue me, Dart Zone. You can't do shit. Anyway, I'm kidding. I'm obviously kidding.
I will say.
I mean, I hope I'm kidding.
They learned very quickly how we were getting things. Like, we were getting the images off of their website, right? And then when you saw they basically gave us teaser Easter eggs for the Mark 2.1 with the magazines. They gave us Easter eggs like that. I think it was even in the file name about that. So they know what we're doing. So, it's like they're playing into
it. They are. I absolutely believe they are, because leaks help to get discussion. Anything talking is publicity. If we're talking and discussing and speculating, even say here on the podcast or in the news, that's drumming up hype. And that's, you can't really buy that. That's free publicity for them in that case.
Yeah.
So the thing about Dart Zone, and specifically their Pro line, is they have found an incredibly niche, really interesting market. The way that our hobby gets and circulates news is insane. You don't have to spend practically any money on making advertisements whatsoever. All you have to do is put a little seed in somebody's ear, and then they're going to talk about it to everyone, and suddenly everyone's going to know about it. All the children, and I'm not just saying that like to I'm not just saying that. Like, it's usually children. A lot of adults, but mostly children, are going to see these things and go, whoa, Drax talking about this, or whoa, Cooper Wildcom, and then they're just going to buy these things in droves. Mm. They don't have to spend shit on advertising. Yeah. If you've noticed, most of our commercials for these things don't have live actors in them like most of the Nerf commercials you see on TV. They're just renders. Good renders, but they are still renders, and those are comparatively cheap compared to hiring real actors.
Absolutely.
And that stuff like that.
I never thought of it
that way.
They
don't have to spend much on advertising at all.
That's absolutely true. I think about that a lot as a YouTube creator that does reviews, is that I am essentially creating... if the product is bad, I'm still putting it in front of people. They're still seeing something
PR
that they may not have seen before. And so, like, if I do a review of, for example, Thembertrod, a ridiculous Nerf blaster that is sitting right here that I have to write a review on, someone who loves D&D is going to see it, and the fact that I give it a low score doesn't matter. That person has now seen, oh, shoot, I really want that on my shelf. So that is sort of a cycle that I think, this exists in a lot of industries, but I do think that it's a pretty powerful force in this hobby in particular. We are going to jauntily move on forward into a little thing we like to do in the middle of this podcast called What's That Blaster? This is a game that we play where one person on the team selects an official Nerf blaster and reads a slightly modified version of the official description of the blaster. And the other hosts get to guess. Taffy, you're just going to get to guess with the host today, and you can be the first guest with points on the board if you want. If you are able to guess the name of the blaster without any hints, there's 4 points for each person guessing. If there are 3 lifelines, which include the release year of the blaster, the initial, the original firing capacity of the blaster, and the third lifeline. Which there's always some detail of this game that I forget when I'm prepping for this. What's the third lifeline? It was the original retail price of the blaster as well. This is my week to pick a blaster. I have already prepared my spiel here. How do you feel about this game that you didn't know exist before a few seconds ago, Taffy?
The answer is, insert the answer here in a text-to-speech voice.
Fabulous.
I'm kidding.
Okay, well, I am going to go ahead and read my description. Jolt and Vile, are you ready? Taffy, are you ready?
I'm ready to be stomped.
I am.
Jolt, so...
I am ready.
The history,
my body's
so,
ready.
The history so far of this game, Taffy, is Jolt knows all the blasters. That's...
I would have expected that, Jolt.
That's basically
like Joel, you can literally name, if somebody sends a picture of a lock, you are gonna know exactly blaster that is from.
Oh yes,
and exactly what fucking revision it's from.
We talked about this on the first episode. Jolt has definitely seen parts sitting on my bench in pictures that were not of those parts. It was just I was taking a picture of something else and it just happened to be there, and he was like, oh, what's that catch from a second revision retaliator doing on your bench? It's like
he has seen some shit. He has seen all the shit.
I wish that were true.
Here's my description. Listen carefully. And I'll be replacing certain things with like series and blaster, so that I don't give it away. Let the adventure begin with series, bows, and blasters. Guard the world from the dark forces that threaten it and launch into action as a powerful protector. Take aim with the blank blaster that fires capacity darts in a row and comes with a charm bracelet and charms. Fires capacity darts in a row without reloading. Load capacity darts into the blaster, then pull the handle back and release it to send one dart sailing through the air. The blank blaster fires darts up to 75 feet. Join with friends to lead the way into action and adventure with the blank blaster from Hasbro.
I'm going to go out on a limb. It's already
Rebel. The blaster that is being described. I know exactly the blaster that is being described, but I can't remember the name.
No.
And that's going to piss me off to no end. It's the pull and release bow. That's the 4-shot smart AR from the charmed sub-series of Rebel.
I was just going to guess Guardian Crossbow because when he said, I already forgot what you said. But you said something that made me think Guardian Crossbow. But that was a six-shot, almost a strong-arm... It wasn't pull-and-release.
See, what gives it away here is there's... I believe there's only one pull-and-release blaster under the Charmed series, and the Charmed series was the one that had little bracelets with the charms on them. Whatever. So, and I believe the only one that was pull-and-release...
Oh, yeah, the Guardian Crossbow was Secrets and Spies.
I don't know. That was a little different. The Secrets and Spies things had a separate thing with the little decoders.
The red decoder thing, yeah.
But that's kind of what gives this away as being the four-shot Smart AR bow, because I believe that's the only one in that series that is pull and release.
I'm gonna tell you one thing though. That mechanism explanation may not be accurate, even though it is in the official description.
Which is
interesting.
Which is confusing because River Jolt, there was the one that had the actual arrows that you could load up. And it would actually drop an arrow back down, and you would pull and release.
I remember Cooper viewed that one. The arrows kept falling out if you shoot the blaster.
Now, I was going to ask if it's part of the Charmed, but I didn't think it was. But I knew that there's another one. So the only other one is the four-shot, like you mentioned, the single-shot, which, again, I don't remember if they did a Charmed version of the single-shot.
Okay. Should I list off the ones that I know of here?
Well,
so Nerf or Bell combo?
There are a few. So there's the Joltoid, which is I don't think it's this one. But there's I think it's called the Dauntless, which is the messenger, but in that scheme. Yep. And there was also what was it called? I think the Fair Fortune crossbow, which was a string like elastic powered top prime bow. That was also a revolver. So
funny you mentioned Dauntless, by the way. I'm actually wearing my Dauntless jersey right now.
Nice.
What are y'all thinking?
So I'm thinking if your hint there was that basically that the description might be misleading, that it makes me want to say it's either the Smart AR bow, which was my original guess because of the pull and release, or it's going to be the Fair Fortune crossbow. So that's my guess. It's got to be one of those two.
You, of course, also have three lifelines, which may narrow it down.
Unfortunately, I think those two blasters would be similar price points.
I don't think it's the crossbow. Because the crossbow was only a single shot, wasn't it?
Actually, no, the crossbow is a revolver. And now that I think
Well,
I think we should use the lifeline for capacity, because the capacity will give it away.
Yeah, capacity would be better.
Because we know the capacity is 4 of the pull-and-release bow. So if it's not that, we know it's the other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's the Kenner crossbow.
Do you...
Kenner crossbow!
Do you want the capacity lifeline?
Yes, I would go with capacity.
I think so.
Okay. The stock capacity...
I don't care.
The stock capacity is 3.
That means that... Interesting. That's the Dauntless, then.
That is interesting, huh?
That is the Dauntless.
Yeah, because the only...
That is my final answer.
Yeah, there was only a few that even had a 3-shot in it, and that was Dauntless, Messenger, which wasn't part of the Charms, and then there was... It wouldn't be any of those other variants, was it? It would have to be the Dauntless?
No, because
sure?
This is the only one with the 3-shot in the Charmed sub-series.
Okay, so yeah, I would have to say it's the Dauntless then.
It absolutely Dauntless.
How do you feel, Taffy? Do you agree?
I think it's the Nerf Mega Thunderbow.
All right, going with the Mega Thunderbow. No, I'm kidding. All right, is Dauntless your final answer?
It is for me, yes.
Yes.
Sure.
All right, you are correct for 3 points each for everyone on the team. It is the Nerf Rebel Dauntless. Yeah, the official description seems like there's a lot of recycled text between the bows and the blasters. So it has that pull and release, but obviously you pull and release the thing, but then you pull the trigger, but it doesn't say that in the description for whatever reason.
That's very strange to me. I wonder if the descriptions got mixed up at some point.
It's possible, or it's just a big company and they were screwing around and releasing a lot of Rebel blasters all at once and just kind of screwed it up. But you still got it right and narrowed it down. And with the use of, this is our first time using a lifeline and then guessing correctly. So Everybody gets 3 points. Congratulations. And as you might have guessed, and as Taffy already insinuated, I did specifically pick the Dauntless as an homage to our next topic, that Foam Blast, of whom Addy is a member of the Dauntless team, is closing. The store Foam Blast, which has been a big part of the Nerf hobby, and which has sold parts and designed parts that have gone into many, many, many people's modded blasters, is going away for good. And while it's very sad, I think it's actually very good, because I know that Addy and Michelle are looking forward to having, as I said to them earlier, more space in their heads and in their homes for just the rest of their lives to enjoy.
I've been joking with Michelle and Addy constantly lately about the soon to be formerly known as the Foam Blast Closet. And let me tell you, for anybody who isn't aware, Foam Blast is just literally run inside of their house.
Yep.
And it takes up so much more than just a singular closet. It's taking up their guest bedroom, and you can't sleep in the guest bedroom unless you want to sleep on or inside of a worker box, and
that sounds fun to me.
If
they want to be able to have people over again.
Dear listeners of this podcast, if you have not watched the farewell video to Foam Blast announcing the sale that they're having, you should definitely go watch it. It's sweet, it's informative, it's hilarious. It's just a very good video.
If that is not an option to watch, or you don't have internet for some reason, that you still have access to this podcast, do not worry. Just unplug your headphones, wire it to like a modem phone connector, plug it into your modem. We will now transmit a loud, an incredibly loud dial-up signal, so you can watch the video. It may take a little while, though.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll just send
headphone
it. We'll just
warning.
Send it like 12 baud. Via audio. Someone can copy it to a cassette tape and then import the cassette tape to their Commodore 64 and watch it in 16-bit color. Anyway,
note for future KT, after the part where I say headphone warning, please give it a little pause and just start playing a short clip of Megalovania. Or like whatever part of Megalovania sounds the most like modem static.
That is a good, that is a good place to put that. Okay. So what I want to know from y'all, though, is what's the first project you built with parts from Foam Blast?
So my first project with Foam Blast was not actually with parts I bought from them. This was years ago. This was before I graduated from high school. So what happened was I had read Randall Munroe's, the author of XKCD's book, Thing Explainer, which is this amazing book that only explains things like the Saturn V rocket in the simplest, silliest words possible.
Love that.
I was like, that's really funny. So what I was thinking, you know what? I bet I could write a version of this that explains a flywheel cage or something, because that's something that a lot of people seem to really struggle with the idea of. Like we have little Timmy here going, guys, I want to make my stripe shoot harder, but I don't want to open it or modify it. What can I do? I'm sorry, Timmy, but that's just not going to happen, and you should just stop.
IMRs have entered the chat.
Please don't tell kids that. This happens a lot, and it's really annoying, especially to people who are regulars online anywhere, but it's people coming to us first because they don't know where else to go. If they don't know how to Google, all right, you can tell them to Google, but please give them the information first and then send them to Google.
I 100% support this message.
A lot of people are not going to immediately know how to search for things well. And just because you know how to do that doesn't mean that they will.
Well, and if you're in, this has always bugged me. I'm really glad that you're saying this, because if you're in a discussion, you see people go to a discussion channel that's specifically called like Nerf Mod Help, and you ask a question and people are like, Google it. And it's like, I literally came to a space that purports to offer answers to these questions. Why are you just telling me that I have to go find the answers somewhere else? What is the point? What is the point of that? Drives me absolutely bonkers.
So I will again say, it is fine to tell them to Google it, but please give them the information that they came here for first, and don't just tell them next time Google it.
Yeah,
tell them how to search for it. Like next time you need to find something, type in Nerf Strife and whatever it is you're looking for, and then if you don't find what you're looking for, come back here.
Absolutely.
It's also worth noting that this hobby is not exactly super easy to Google for. A lot of the information for things like the Stampede especially is just so scattered and fragmented that if you Google Nerf Stampede, half of it's going to be random Reddit posts for people asking other questions about Stampede, and the other half's just going to be sales listings on eBay going, new, Stampede, mint condition, when the Stampede in question is like covered in dirt and painted black, which I hate when that happens, but that's neither here nor there.
Don't forget it's got to be listed as super ultra duper rare.
Wait. You didn't answer the question, Taffy.
Oh.
What was your first project with parts from Foam Blast?
This happens to me a lot, as you can tell. Anyways.
It's all good.
So, I drew this poster. It was this Fang Explainer style flywheel explainer thing, and I had so much fun drawing that. What ended up happening was Foam Blast Michelle approached me and was like, hey, do you want to have this design put on, like, work mats or something? We can pay you. And me sitting here, I was like 16 or 17 at the time. I was just over the moon for the rest of the day. I even told my mom, she was like, that's great, I'm really proud of you. And from there, we've just been friends ever since.
That's wonderful. I love that so much.
Then I believe my first project from Foam Blast was I bought Talon magazines and a Talon adapter. Yes, that was what I bought. And Worker Darts.
Yeah,
that was my first ever Foam Blast order, and I made a half dart Sentinel.
I think my first order was like 22 round Worker magazines, which I didn't have before that, and like some specific mod part. But I did wind up eventually getting parts from them to build. Jolt and Vile might actually remember this. Some of the first Nerf streams I did, I built a long shot with metal internals.
I remember that.
That I got from them, and I still have that long shot, and I've used it a couple times, but it's far and away not the most efficient blaster that I have to shoot around 150 FPS. So it's like, it's kind of more like I have this thing. It's the first time that I did something like this. Feels nice to own it. Jolt, what was your first project with parts from Foam Blast?
My first and I think only project with something from Foam Blast is a couple of years ago when I was first getting into, like, the NIC proper, like, actually being on social media and talking to people, I asked for Christmas from my parents for the Terminator internals.
Mm.
Because I had thrifted a long shot at a garage sale for $1. I had tried to mod it, and I had broken the bolt sled and the pusher. So I had an empty long shot shell, and I wanted internals for it. And I told them to get them from Foam Blast, and that's exactly what they did. And I have the Terminator internals in my long shot. It's bolt action, and it hits like 250 FPS because it took off the stupid scar. And it's wonderful.
That's awesome. And Vile, how about you?
You know, that's a hard thing because it's been a while for me, and I make very large orders when I buy stuff. So it's hard because a lot of times when I buy things, I don't buy something for one particular build. I buy it for, here's some Retaliator internals. Oh, here's some upgrade springs. Oh, here's some motors. And here's a body kit for something. So for me, it's kind of hard because I'm like, what was the first thing I bought from them? Because I've like, even recently, I just picked up a large order from them because of the closing.
I was going to say, yeah, you and I both took advantage of the
30% off. I saw your name, by the way, while I was over there. So if y'all didn't know...
Well, do you want to tell folks about that experience at all?
Yeah.
I mean, within the realm of what's okay
about. So I'm local to Foam Blast. I'm about a 30-minute drive away. And I actually went to go pick up my order, but they were, since the orders came in, there was hundreds of orders, and you know, Michelle actually offered, like, hey, you know, would you want to come help? And I was like, well, sure, absolutely. I would love to help out with something like this. So I helped them fulfill orders, but I got a tour of, you know, basically Foam Blast. So what Taffy was saying is true. It doesn't just take up one room, Taffy. It takes up a closet in the one room, and then a second room, and then their living room, and then a shed, and then, like, it takes up a lot of their house. So if again, kind of like, if you haven't watched the video, go and kind of watch their video about it.
And in Addie's words, I want my house back.
Yes, yes, yep. And it is very true. I did get to see a lot of really cool stuff. I got to see the blasters that are hanging on the back wall. I got to see where they do the recording. It was really awesome, and hanging out with both Addy and Michelle was actually a lot of fun. They're really fun people. I really like them a lot.
They are some of the best people I know.
Yeah, and they, you know, and by the way, if you are in this podcast, you are watching, and you do decide to go order, there is a comment section when you place an order.
Please say something nice to them. Like, please.
I was stopping every time I was fulfilling an order because I saw the comment at the bottom of the order list, and I would hand it over to Addy to read. And Addy would a lot of times write replies to them in a lot of cases. So they read every single one of those. Making that, use that comment section. Absolutely. If they have affected you, use that.
There's a comment I remember seeing a picture of on an order. And the request was, please write me a haiku. And Addy's response was, opponent peeking out of cover. I take my shot. Boop. I tag the butt.
Oh my god, that's so good. Beautiful. That's amazing. Yeah, I went to put a comment on mine like that, and but then I wound up having to split my order because they were like trying to figure out something with their thing. So I had to put comments in there about the split order instead. So I had to go like send the comment that I was going to leave to Michelle, because I definitely, it's like, what a big, what a huge like transitional moment for them that I think is going to be really, really positive for them. Which I think is wonderful, and they just deserve all of that.
I will say, so talking to them and seeing that, there is a bit of a relief that you can sense from the both of them. So talking to them, I could tell that this is a new chapter, and I think they're happy, because it you know, a lot of people, the video as well kind of explains this. You know, Addy was like, please don't come in and try to tell us how to run a business. They're very good, actually. Their business was run very nice. Like, I got a chance to see it firsthand. I know for a fact that it's run very well. You know, it was just taking over too much, and they have a normal day job, and they just kind of want to get back to that and get back to their normal lives. And actually, talking about potentially, and I said it in the news thing, obviously, you know, we're in weird time frames right here, but they're wanting to get back to running events and potentially going to more events again, which would be awesome, because that means that those of you who are going to large events, y'all might actually get to see them again, because they're not having to, you know, run a business, which is awesome. That's kind of what they wanted to do in the hobby, and the business was kind of getting in the way of that. So I'm very, very happy to see that.
I remember seeing on one of Bobo's FoamCon tour videos, When he got to the Foam Blast table, he was like, hello, I'm... No, Bobo didn't say, hello, I'm Adriana from Foam Blast. That would be hilarious. So Adriana said, hello, I'm Adriana with Foam Blast. We've got so much stuff here today. We've got talons. We've got motors. We've got adapters. We've got cages. We've got Slug's baby for some reason. For context, anybody who doesn't know, Slug occasionally would pull out the baby Raptor Jesus doll. I don't know why he has this thing, but it's a thing he has.
Incredible.
Anyways, it was sitting on the Foam Blast table for some reason. We have Slug's baby for some reason. We've got so many hats. Please buy this stuff. Oh, we have an FDL. We don't sell these. This isn't ours. Please buy this
stuff.
But
it's just there.
I don't want to have to fly home with all of this. Like, it takes up a lot of freaking space.
I'm sure it does. Mm-hmm. Okay. I could gush about Foam Blast forever, and I know that we all could, but I want to leave some time here to gush instead about Taffy, and to hear about the red herring and talk about the things that are coming forward. So let's move on to that, because Taffy, indeed, you are pretty rad. And I want to start with my quick story that the Skewer is actually the first from scratch blaster that I ever built. And as you know, it is also the first from scratch
every time
blaster that my, the older of my two kids built. When they built it, they were 11, and, I just printed the parts and stood there and just sort of like gave them tips, and, they did pretty much the entire thing. A couple steps I think I needed my strength for. But it was such a cool experience for them to be able to do that. And a big part of that, I think, has to do with, My kids still joke about the "I'm just here taking up space" page in the skewer instructions. They still joke about that. They still reference that. And my youngest loves to draw comics and references that pretty consistently in his own comics. Really, really great. And the skewer was really a big moment, I think, in 3D printed blasters, because Captain Slug, obviously it's based to some degree on the Talon Claw, one of Captain Slug's designs, right?
Yeah.
Captain Slug's designs have really dominated in a lot of ways a lot of the 3D printed blaster space, especially Springer's. And I think it was really cool to see something come from a distinctly younger designer that had immediate appeal to a wide variety of people, that's very tunable, that's very accessible. One of the best things about it, I think, is that the pull style on it. I did say I was going to gush about this, so here we go. One of the things I think is that the pull style that you put on it, direct pulls are so efficient that it makes the blaster more accessible, like physically accessible. I know that that's part of why I wanted my kids to play with them, because it was the...
Didn't you say one of your kids was able to prime the K-25?
Yes. So my...
I'd like to put that on the record.
Yeah.
A child was able to prime a K-25 Springer that can hit upwards of 220, 230 FPS. I think the record's been like 260.
Yeah, so...
Let that sink in.
My...
A child has firepower rivaling that of an adult on the playing field.
My main one...
Please don't let your kids play if it's unsupervised. Sorry for cutting you off.
Well,
it's
when we built the kid one, we tuned it down to make it... Basically, it primes as easily as a lot of toy blasters and then was hitting 150. We're now at the point where they can prime mine and shoot over 200, like you were saying. we took it to games, and there's some video actually of like a game where they were like shooting with it a bunch and then put it down and like snuck around back and like flipped over a goal and won it for their team. But like all the adults thought that they won, and he had like snuck in. It's great stuff. Love being able to take him to those games and having the equipment.
You did not tell me about this. That is fantastic.
It's in a video. There's a gameplay video on my channel about that. They have so much fun at the like 200 FPS games, just wearing their iPro and hiding behind cars.
I am honored. I would also like to go on record and say that none of this was paid. None of this was a paid advertisement. I feel like in the future, I will almost definitely have enemies for whatever reason. And
you need to be clear that this is just...
This is not a paid advertisement.
No, this is extremely earnest.
We just genuinely love the skewer.
KT, blink twice if you're being held hostage.
I want to say...
This is a podcast nobody can see.
I want to add in... So the one thing that I really like about it... I don't have a skewer, but the one thing I want to say that I like about it is the accessibility, because... You have to understand, in a lot of cases, for some people who might have certain disabilities, accessibility like that is huge for inclusion. And that's something that I appreciate about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It does make a huge, huge difference. Absolutely. For things like that. That's again, it's sort of like the one that Captain Slug made that you can hold with one arm and prime by pushing it forward.
Well, it's funny that you would mention that, Vile, because that blaster is the Piranha, which was the inspiration for the Red Herring, which is your new release that we reported on in the news episode this time around, that I have been anxiously waiting for quite a while, and I'm super excited to get my hands on one way or another. What I kind of want to ask you a few questions about the process that led to the Red Herring, Taffy.
I'd be honored.
Well, so,
before we get into those real quickly, I want to just touch on the fact that you mentioned skewer accessibility. So I went into that design with the intention from the start that I knew I was not going to be able to produce these kits myself.
The skewer or the herring?
The skewer.
Okay.
And the herring, but specifically the skewer I'm talking about. So... For context, that blaster had been in development since, I believe, April of 2021, and then released in July. that's a 3 month development cycle, roughly, which is one, that's a really fast turnover time. And two, I was just 18. I was living at my parents' house, soon to be off to college, and I didn't have a job or any money. Realistically, I would never be able to produce these things on my own. And the only way I could get my own hardware to begin with was buying parts direct from Slug. So that's exactly what I did, and I designed around these parts. Mm. A lot of these other homemades on the market that aren't designed by people like Orion Blasters, Silly Butts, those are some of my friends. Those are the only people that come to mind other than Slug. Anyways, you find these things, and these kits are either from smaller shops, and there's not a problem with that, or you just find these random offshoot designs on Thingiverse that have the most random crap you can ever imagine listed, or it's just like a list of screws. Those aren't hard to acquire, but that's something that you have to go out and find.
It's an obstacle.
If you
it's
can just
obstacle.
Buy a pre-built kit, if you can just find a kit from somebody like Slug, Silver Fox, or soon Out of Darts, that makes the process so much easier. Mm-hmm. And now onto Red Herring, which is also built around standard hardware.
Mm-hmm. So
what were those questions?
Well, here's what I want to ask you. Here's what I want to ask you, Taffy. And we to some degree we've addressed this talking about accessibility and talking about these things. But what drew you to the Piranha as the basis for like the concept for a new design? And what were the problems with the Piranha that you wanted to solve with your new design?
So the Piranha as a whole is this whole interesting story. I got my real start in homemades after browsing Nerf Haven. This was even earlier than when I started working on the skewer and looking at all these old PVC style homemades. I'm like, that's really cool. I could do that. These things aren't very expensive. And eventually I stumbled on Captain Slug's Piranha, which was a beautiful machined K26 pulley prime thing. And I was like, I want to make one of those. That's really cool. Eventually, I realized that I don't have access to a scroll saw, a bandsaw, or any of the things required to make this. So it just sort of fell out. But then, like 6 months or so later, by sheer chance, I think it was because I bugged Slug about this enough, he starts working on a 3D printed version of the Piranha. And this one is MagFed. And I go, oh, whoa, what's this? Debating on whether I want to leave that clip of me going, oh, whoa, what's this in there? But anyways.
Oh, that is 100% staying in there. Continue.
Shit. Leave this 100%. Part in here, too, because that's
how
funny.
Can we not?
Anyways, he's working on this. And I'm like, rubbing my hands together, I know what I want to get. So a friend of mine, 404, otherwise known as Dan, was like, dude, I'll buy you a hardware kit. And I'm like, no, you won't. Yes, I will. And then it showed up. I'm like, holy shit, he bought me a kit. So eventually, the Piranha 2M, the M stands for magazine, and the 2 stands for this is the second Piranha ever. It's released. I get my own printer. I've been saving up for this for the second half of the high school year. And so I get the printing, and it's eventually done. I have a Piranha. And then I primed it. It was not great. I could get into a whole slew of reasons why the Piranha was bad, but the biggest things were the pulley was really annoying. The way this blaster worked was it had some paracord tied to the plunger, which works sort of like a Caliburn plunger. It has a sear on the trigger, and the plunger just gets pulled back and locks in. There's this paracord tied into the plunger that goes up to the front, goes around the pulley, and then goes backwards towards your shoulder. It's also attached to this slidey thing to which you also attach your sling. Whenever you wanted to take this blaster apart to swap springs out, you would have to untie the cord, and it was this whole ordeal to get the whole thing back together. You'd have to feed it through. It was a pain in the butt. Mm. To make matters worse, actually just reassembling thing, even aside from the cord, was also a pain in the butt. There was also this...
Didn't it also have a really horrible seal that you fixed in your revisions?
Yes, and we're going to get to that. Now, here's the biggest problem with the Piranha. And it is an actual safety hazard. So with this being a pulley prime thing and all that cord, right? Once the plunger is pulled all the way back or forward because it's got a turnaround, once the plunger is all the way back and caught, right?
Yeah.
The plunger doesn't slide back, but the slidey thing on top does.
Yes.
You now have all this extra cord that would have been normally taken up by a plunger being in the forward position. But now it's just sticking out the front, and you can't really have that. Look, it looks messy and all that sort of crap.
Right.
So what Slug decided to do, and this is really clever,
the piranha
is he
jaw.
Has this spring-loaded jaw at the front that pivots forward.
I love
when the
jaw.
Blast is primed.
Are you going to tell me the jaw is a safety
really
hazard? Because I love the jaw. I mean, it's obviously a safety hazard, but I love it. It's so cute.
It's so cool. It's so clever.
Don't put your hand in the jaw.
But, like, this thing would pop open. It was spring loaded, so that way it would take up the extra slack of the core, and then when you fire, it would snap shut really quickly, and it was so freaking cool to watch. The problem is, this jaw is at right at the front of the blaster, which also happens to be the perfect spot to rest your offhand.
Mm.
If you were not aware of what this blaster did when you were operating it, and you put your hand here, once you fire, this—I am not kidding when I say this—that jaw snaps forward with enough force to break fingers.
That had not occurred to me because every time. Okay, so for context, I own a piranha. It is the piranha that Drac reviewed. I wound up picking it up through Blaster Barn. Mostly because I had just always wanted to mess around with a piranha, and it was cheap, and now I have it. It's like the yellow and black one that's in that video. And every time that I've messed with it, I've had to do a bunch of work on it, and I have more work to do on it. But every time I mess with it, I'm generally trying to use it with one hand, so it had never occurred to me to put my hand up front. But obviously that is a problem.
Please do not if you'd like to keep your hand
attached. I'm not planning on it. But generally, if I was using that blaster, as you describe in some of your red herring documentation, I want to be holding something else in my other hand, a foam sword, maybe the Dungeons & Dragons foam melee sword that just showed up in the mail in a box that was falling open today.
We will definitely get into my favorite ways to run one-handed blasters, but that's for the next section.
Maybe so.
Anyways, go on.
I do have that piranha and there is a lot of funkiness going on with that thing. Now you sent me a new it's like a shuttle. I don't know what you called the part, which is it's sitting on my bench.
If it was
next
the slidey thing with all the holes. That was the shuttle. Yeah,
the shuttle. So I need to finish installing that. That on it because it hopefully will make a big difference because one of the main issues is just friction. Like there's spots where it's like, I mean, you can lubricate stuff, but at a certain point there's so many things moving back and forth and things are being pulled at weird angles, and it seems like the shuttle sort of fixes some of the angles.
Yeah, this is going to be really hard to explain over a podcast if they're not.
We don't have to get super technical, but
no, it's not going to get technical, but it just helps to actually see it. It's not complicated. It's just like,
yeah,
once you see the proportions, like where everything is sitting, it makes a lot of sense.
Totally.
Basically, the shuttle, the point where you attach the sling to the blaster is pretty high up above the grip. And what happens as you prime this is because it's so high up, it's like pulling or pushing on a lever. Instead of pushing forward, the blaster tries to tilt because it pivots right where the sling is attached. And the sling doesn't move relative to your body because, you know, it's around your body.
Right.
So basically, the grip tries to twist it down. The back of the blaster tries to twist down and forwards. The barrel points up. It just rotates around that pivot point.
Mm.
And you now have to fight the twisting force of the blaster while pushing forward. And putting all that strain on your wrist is not fun.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that matches my
experience.
The
new shuttle fixes this by just pushing the sling attachment point a little closer to the grip.
Yeah.
So that way it's less extreme of a twisting force.
That matches my experience. I'll get around to installing that part and getting that piranha up and running. But I really want to get my hands on a red herring as soon as I can. So it will AB them or something.
I guess now is a good time to segue into the red herring.
Yes, please.
All right. Let's talk herring. Let me pull up my GitHub.
Well, again, my core question is, do you feel like you achieved these improvements with the red herring? How did that work out?
Oh, hell yeah.
Let's hear about it.
Dude, okay. Red herring. I've been running this thing basically exclusively for the past 10 months. This has been in development since April.
Yeah.
It's a pint-sized, talon-fed powerhouse hitting 220+ feet per second, all while being operated entirely with one hand. This thing can also be gutted and reassembled completely without any tools in about 12 seconds. Have you ever wanted to snipe with one hand?
Yes.
This thing is designed for one-handed use. It's about half the size of a talon claw, but has enough punch to make the cross-field shots that those hammer shot people can only dream of. Now, the Piranha was a blaster designed with a similar use case in mind, but as evidence, I was never really happy with how mine worked. This thing was designed, again, from the ground up to be a better Piranha.
Yeah.
It's safer. It's simpler. It's lighter. It's cheaper, and it is so much more efficient. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I got the final hard. I believe I got the final hardware kit prices back from Silver Fox. It was going to be. It's actually about $20 cheaper than I was expecting it to be. Kits are probably going to start at around $30, which is
whoa.
I might have to buy a couple kits.
That's cool.
That is. I was not expecting any of this to happen at all. This blaster is going to get into so many more people's hands because of
it. Do you know when the kit? So Silver Fox Industries is making the kits. Do you know when the kits are going live?
I am not certain when the kits will be going live, but I expect it will be before the end of the month.
Cool. That's exciting. And is it just going to be hardware kits at first, or are they doing printed parts too?
Kits at first, and then we will be offering fully assembled blasters.
Wow. Is there going to be a complete kit option in between, is the other question.
Yes.
Sweet. That's so cool. I can't wait. Anyway, so tell us about how... What do you think are the key improvements in this over the Piranha?
Oh my gosh, where do I even begin? Okay, so I mentioned 12-second complete disassembly and reassembly.
That's huge.
That is not an exaggeration. Wherever the description for this podcast is going to be, I'm going to send you a link later for the video.
Sure.
Of me. Where I, after getting absolutely no sleep that day, managed to completely gut and reassemble this thing in 12 seconds to swap a spring. That is not an exaggeration. You can time that video.
I believe you.
I fumbled a little.
Well, we've talked for more than 12 seconds, so if I put the video in the podcast, it's already played. No, don't wait 12 seconds now. Anyway, keep going.
No, I'm just trying. I'm like... This thing is the product of, again, 10 months of work.
Yeah.
It actually started as a stress project around finals. Wow. This thing is really easy to disassemble and reassemble. I have had to clean and unjam this thing multiple times. There's just a little spring-loaded latch at the front. I'm holding it right now. You can just twist, pull the barrel out like an end strike attachment, then shove it right back in, twist, click, you're good.
Mm.
You do that, you slide the breech back, you dump the catch out the front, and suddenly you have access to the spring, the plunger rod, the plunger tube. You can grease everything, swap your springs. You are good to go. This thing is... You can field strip this. I've done it before because I've had it jam a couple times.
Mm.
Okay, what else? Oh, this thing is tiny. I have a picture we'll throw up here in a second here. This thing is about the size of a Strife. That's not an exaggeration.
Wow.
This thing is just... tiny.
Well, so how did you get it to be so small? How did you get it to be so small with that much power?
So this is built on Talonclaw 4 hardware. So it's the 1/2 inch by 1/8 inch aluminum flat bar. And the plunger tube is just 4 inches long. This is the same piece of material stock that is used in the Captain Slug Hyper, Whisper, and Esper. It has 3 inches of draw, but it has 3 inches of draw, but 1/2 inch is taken up by the air brake. Oh, so special thanks to Orion Blasters for graciously allowing me to use the catch and plunger head design from the Lynx. I would not have been able to get this thing as small as it is without that.
Mm.
But yeah, this thing uses a Lynx plunger head and Lynx catch and has about as much draw as a Kronos does.
That's barely enough to chamber a dart, but that's still enough to be really powerful.
Yeah, this thing can hit like 240 if it's tuned properly. I actually ran this at a 300 cap game and did really well with it.
Mm.
Okay, what is next? What is next?
Well, what else? What other improvements would you say you've made over what the Piranha was? That's what they want to hear because people know the Piranha. It's not the most well known 3D printed blaster out there, but I think that kind of gives people a point of comparison for what to expect.
So this thing for context, if you try to prime a piranha on a K-25, you cannot prime a piranha on a K-25. I have tried. It is awful. Mm. You can hit like 275 with it with the correct barrel because it has about 5 inches of draw, which is more than a Talon Claw does, but it just feels terrible. Mm. This thing with an SF-25 TC, which is just a cut down K-25 with flat ground ends, can hit 240 handily with a prime that you don't even have to think about. If you can throw a good punch, if you can even throw a mediocre punch, which is the motion you should be making when you try to prime this thing, you can do it.
Mm.
It's going to take a little practice to get used to the whole action of pushing, because instead of pulling something towards you, it's more like you're using the muscles you use to do a push-up, which are stronger than the muscles that you have to pull towards yourself.
Yeah.
The prime on here is fantastically easy. Everybody I've handed this to who didn't struggle at first with the ergonomics was easily able to get a hold of this, and like they love it. I love it.
I'm so excited for this thing. I mean, everything you say makes me more excited about it. I didn't realize that it was so small. That's super cool. That is super cool.
Oh, yeah. We can throw a picture up on screen here again. I feel so professional just saying that. You should throw something of mine on here that makes me look unprofessional for contrast.
You got to send me pictures anyway, because I need them for the episode, which is about 80% edited at this moment. One of the things I'm missing is the red herring photos.
Right. So where were we? It was tiny, right? What else was I saying?
It's tiny. It's... more efficient. You described it as more efficient earlier.
Oh yeah, this thing is loads more efficient. You're hitting like just about the same numbers on about half the plunger draw.
Well, and plunger draw is really important, right? Because you're doing this one arm motion. So if you're able to get it that efficient with the lower plunger draw, that makes the motion of priming easier and makes it, I would guess, easier to stay. Obviously, you're not going to be able to like stay fully on target like you can with a pump blaster, but you can stay more on target because there's less of a shift in what you're doing to prime.
So with this being so short, and I also did mention having a place for your offhand. So quick little tangent. A big struggle I had with this blaster was trying to design a comfortable place for the offhand, because despite its intention for use as a purely one-handed thing, you're not always going to be running it with one hand. I usually don't run it exclusively with one hand, and I just like, you can shoulder this thing so freaking tightly, it's insane.
Yeah.
You can hide just about anywhere with it. You just need a place to put that other hand. Right now, it's just a block at the front, but...
That works.
But I just gave up, unfortunately.
Well, I assume you've completely eliminated the jaw issue because there's just no cord involved?
Yeah, there is nothing here that can pinch you.
And there's no turnaround on this design, I assume?
There is a turnaround.
There is still a turnaround.
This is basically just built... Yeah, so this is... I'll throw a video up on screen of operation. This is basically just a lynx that has been cut in half.
Oh, okay. Cut in half and, like, flipped over.
No, not flipped. This is just a lynx that... Once you see the video, it'll make total sense.
Sweet.
It's the amalgamation of a piranha and a lynx.
Okay.
The original name for his project was actually going to be Catfish, but Red Herring ended up sounding cooler.
You do have a flair for names. I appreciate that
Catfish.
A lot as well.
Oh, man. I'm almost kind of sad that they didn't become the name.
Actually,
that would have been so perfect.
That would be really good. Here's the real question. Are you going to do another cute assembly manual?
Oh, hell yeah. But the problem is...
Absolutely. So important.
The only problem with that is the instructions probably will not be released for a little while, until after the blaster has made its rounds a bit, which I really hope doesn't screw up the release. But
well, you could also version
it. The instructions were difficult to write. Those were, like, took half the amount of time that the blaster took to write, just because so much work went into them.
Well, I'll tell you, you really nailed it with those instructions, though. Because, like I said, my 11-year-old could follow them. Like, you really figured out something on that.
There were some pages on there that were particularly messy, especially, which we'll throw up on screen right now, The RAM base assembly, that is just a mess of words, text,
I do remember
letters,
that being
labels.
A tricky... But it's a tricky thing. Like, there's only so much you can do, I think, unless you're going to break that down into multiple steps.
I probably should have broken it down into multiple steps, but that's a lesson I know going forward. Luckily, herring assembly, I'm willing to bet money that somebody could probably put one of these together in about 5 minutes.
Mm.
5 to 10 minutes.
Challenge on. Challenge like, on. We'll see. I'll just
assuming
I'll
that
do
the
my
parts
best.
Have already been touched up.
Yeah.
Or like if they're Silver Fox parts, they're just going to fit together first time
for sure.
But if the parts don't stick on the bars, I've been trying to grind out those last few tolerance gremlins. You should be able to just slide everything on, screw everything together in like quickly, very quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think I speak for everyone here when I say that this is a really exciting new design. I'm so pumped to get my hands on one and play around with this. The play possibilities, the accessibility options with this, just mind-blowing, in my opinion.
Oh, and this, on the subject of play possibilities, I do have a section here written about single-hand operation. Why is this blaster useful?
Mm.
The short version, you can now hold a flag, shield, or worker nightingale while using a no-frills 220
yes.
FPS Springer.
I read that.
You can cross-map people while holding a shield, a flag, a carpe ball, or you can just suddenly switch from trying to fight off Mike or somebody with their Caliburn to suddenly you're running towards them at full speed with a nightingale and they have no idea how to react to that.
Yeah,
nobody's going to know how to react to
get
that.
Get out of here, Mike.
Having an extra hand free during a game opens up a ton of utility, and you can really just get creative, and I really want to see what people come up with.
No, I think that, again, that's a really unique part of this hobby where there are so many different objective-oriented games that we have. And, you know, I think a lot about, like, what kind of blaster you want to use if you're playing a game like Titan Ball, where you need to either – a lot of times when I play Titan Ball, like, someone on the team just becomes the person that doesn't use a blaster and is, like, focused entirely on doing Titan work because you need – both hands.
And this blaster will basically let you do that with having an actual blaster instead of a sword.
Mm-hmm.
We will get to that. Now, on the subject of swords, my personal favorite way to run this thing, it's the way I've been running it for the past two games, is to have a pool noodle sword attached to my belt rig. So that way I have a much more reliable and courteous way of tagging people out at close range, because nobody likes getting point blanked at 200 FPS. At my first warped skewer prototype, my first ever tag was I bunkered a dude, and I didn't know what to do. He was looking at me. I was looking at him. So my first instinct was just point blaster, fire. I point blanked this dude in the nuts. Sorry, Crow. It was either me or you there.
Oh, no.
Anyways, the other problem is, in addition to making people not able to have kids anymore, blasters can jam when you really need them to not jam. Like, what would normally be a simple, quick, effective flank would suddenly become, uh-oh, my blaster's dead, and then suddenly you just you lit up in the face by Kevin or somebody with their proton pack.
Right.
Fuck you, Kevin. Anyways, yeah, swords don't jam, and they don't hurt. You can smack somebody with the might of Zeus using a pool noodle, and it's not even gonna bruise them.
For sure.
The most exhilarating thing I've tried has been running this blaster with a stockless griffin in my other hand. Flywheel volume and springer distance at the same time is just too much freaking fun. You can go back and forward with an opponent's Caliburn and then just suddenly be bum rushing them before you even know what's going on. While still being able to return a shot or two from your own springer.
I love that.
Like, that's happened before. It's fantastic. I also got lit up immediately by Kevin with their proton pack. Fuck you, Kevin. Again. But it almost worked.
The hell, Kevin.
Now, games that involve carrying an object such as carpe or capture a flag, as mentioned, those usually favored flywheelers because up until now, they were the only effective blasters that could be used while carrying things. They are fantastic for pushing people back as you get close to them. And if you're pointing at somebody, anybody in that general direction is probably going to get hit if you're within maybe 50 feet. Now, we have a springer that can also be used entirely with one hand. And now it's not going to have the same rate of fire or volume as a flywheeler, hell no, but it opens up the potential for some pretty interesting new mix-ups. Suddenly, you can be doing a flag push, pick like maybe one or two people off if you're really good, grab that flag, and run back. As long as you don't get hit during that part, you're good.
Hmm.
But if you buddy up with somebody who does have flywheels, and for some reason they don't want to make the push themselves, You can now do some really interesting stuff.
Oh, totally.
Shields. My original marketing pitch for this is the blaster that will make your group rewrite their shield rules.
Yeah.
You basically have the power and about 3/4 the rate of fire of a Talonclaw. while also running a shield. And if your group does not place limitations on shield size, they are probably going to hate you by the end of the day, if not rewrite the rules by the end of a round and either ban shields or ban repairs.
This really does feel like a rule-changing, kind of game-changing kind of blaster in a lot of ways, because it offers abilities that weren't possible with one hand and with the same sort of tandem
Again,
things.
One of these properly tuned can hit 240 FPS. At least that's my current record right now.
That's huge for one hand. That's massive for one hand.
The blaster's no bigger than a Strife.
I think that might be the record just for its size for one hand usability.
Yeah.
Because the hammer shot, even Radioactive can't get a hammer shot hitting that hard.
I'm pretty sure he can, or at least I'm pretty sure he's hit 200 before, but like,
not 240.
This is easier. This is consistent. This is mag-fed.
It isn't like 9 million inch long brass barrel with a prime so stiff you need to go to the gym for just your thumbs.
You don't need to do anything fancy for your darts. You don't need to do anything fancy. Make sure you're using... Actually, you know what? That's a lie. Kane's dart pool is just awful. Everything
to be fair,
jams
that's just
with
a Kane problem.
But if you're using otherwise reasonably okay darts, you can still hit ranges with this. That was, again, I mentioned earlier, this thing can make the cross field shots that Hammershot users can only dream of.
Yeah, sounds like it. Okay, I have one last big question for you, Taffy, before we start to close this out, because we're going pretty long, which is so easy to do because I'm so pumped about this and love hearing you talk about it because you're so passionate.
We can
about
just
it.
Make this episode a special episode.
Oh,
special
it will. Feature. It will be. It is our first episode with a guest, which is honestly just a delight. I'm so glad that we've had you here. But here's my last question.
Had a better guest for our first guest.
I know that this question might be hard to think about right now because you're like how it can be when you. But you haven't even really fully released the red herring in a lot of ways because people can't get hardware kits yet and all this stuff. But like to still be in this mode, I want you to take a second and take a deep breath and think about what's next for Caramel Designs.
Double barrel sniper.
Oh, I guess that wasn't hard. But people making the
I was prepared for that joke because I knew you were going to ask it. And I've already been prepping to work on my next project.
Making the double skewer wasn't good enough?
Hell no. That thing is... It's not great.
I know.
It's not great.
It's a meme. It's a great meme. It's a great meme. But no. So a double barrel sniper, what is the plan here?
So I basically want two springers integrated together as tightly as possible.
Okay.
The idea being, I don't want a shotgun. I want to be able to have a springer and suddenly make a really quick follow-up shot like... Bang, bang.
Mm.
Like, this could really open up some interesting possibilities for some different types of plays. Normally, you're running into a springer. You're making a flank. You get one person, maybe another person if you're lucky. Possibly free if you have a Talon Clowner going really fast. But, like, all right, you get some people out.
Yeah.
Being able to just suddenly go bang, bang with, like, two pulls of a trigger, that's almost going to guarantee you at least get one hit or two.
So are you hoping you're intending for them to be controlled by the same trigger where it automatically goes one and then does the other one on the next pull, like it switches back and forth?
I'm probably going to have two separate triggers.
Okay.
One for your index finger and one for your middle that's in front of the index.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Or something like that.
Well, that's certainly something to look forward to. That's what I love about this hobby is just like the sort of like ridiculous things that are worth doing because you can sort of put them out in the world. You know, like that, there's that whole release that Silly did of just like a bazillion unfinished designs that can just kind of be out in the world. And for someone who has a 3D printer and a bunch of slug parts, like it's worth making. And even something like this, like, you know, people built double skewers. People will definitely build something like that, even if it has a semi-niche.
This also ties a little back into the idea of Nerf is different from real steel, it's different from airsoft, it's different from paintball.
Yeah.
The way that we play has its own set of dynamics that a double springer brings something new and actually practical and useful to the table. If you build a blaster like that correctly, and I'm going to go all out on this thing, This is going to be so tightly integrated that it's going to be seamless. You will just be able to prime. It's probably going to be two separate primes, though, and fire and just bang off two shots and get two people out.
Yeah.
It's also probably going to be over under. I basically want these to be, you don't have to adjust your aim at all. You just go. I really hope it recorded the fart sounds. It did.
I got it. We're good. Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Anyways, it's a vile stream, everybody.
I'll throw some reverb on that and make sure it really gets accented.
You gotta play the fart version of Megalovania.
Glad, yes.
Welcome to Caramel Designs. We've got skewer, art style, and irreverence.
Okay, well, as we roll this out to a... wait, hold on. You know what? Wait, we have one other thing to talk about really fast. Now that we have thoroughly gushed deservedly about your designs, there's one other design that just came out recently that I do want to chat about briefly before we end this up. I don't know. I did the reporting on this for the show, and I don't know if all y'all have looked at it in much detail, but Bruce Lee just put out the Nail Clipper, which is a band-powered bullpup revolver.
Oh, I thought when he... So I'm looking here at the outline. I thought Nail Clip was just what you decided to call the outro for some reason.
No. That's a blaster. I also didn't put very clear notes about what it is in the outline because I knew that it would be kind of a tag on the end of the show.
Yeah, all I saw was like Nail Clipper ending with something light and fun.
Well,
I was like,
have you...
Is this a new outro section? Are we going to do
Taffy,
something
have you,
funny?
Have you seen the Nail Clipper?
Yes, I have. And I'm
what
like,
do you think?
I recognize that cylinder geometry. Silly actually made a video explaining how to make those cam slider tracks.
Yeah. Well, because weren't you working on something that was a bullpup revolver for a while?
Yes, and we will throw the image on screen right... Oh, no, that's a meme. That's
stop
a
making,
shit post. That's
stop making
shit
me
post.
Stop making me edit the podcast so much, man.
We don't normally have images, and now we're going to have like 50 of them.
No,
thanks,
I
got to
have all these images. I know I suggested
don't worry,
the first
it's not
one.
Be that many.
Anyway, I am making a list.
This is the Orbit. This is a bullpup revolver.
The Orbit.
That I was working
right.
on. I believe this actually happened. Yeah, this was my last game of December, and unfortunately, my Kitty X12, which was my main printer at the time, the nozzle has just been getting more and more worn. I've been running the same nozzle for like almost 2 years now. Everything was coming out over extruded. In other words, everything was coming out a little oversized. The holes were too small. The parts were too big. The rotation guts would not fit properly into the blaster. So unfortunately, I had a manual revolver all day, but everybody still liked it. The blaster was only about the size of a Talon magazine, as you can see here.
Yeah, I remember it was really little.
And it was an interesting little thing.
Yeah. Is that ever going to see release? Or is that... mothballed indefinitely.
So interestingly, the Orbit frame is very similar to a Red Herring frame. In fact, he could probably transplant the two over with enough work. What I'll probably do, if anything, is convert the Red Herring design, or at least convert a Red Herring just frame into a cylinder-fed monstrosity. Because like, I don't want to have to redesign the Orbit chassis. It was not a good design. It was a little twisty. It was bad.
Fair enough. Well, rolling back onto topic, the Nail Clipper is really interesting, I think, because it's a stringer and it's completely hardware free. I think he did like printable rod hardware parts in there maybe that like hold a couple things together, but it's apparently hardware free. It's just printed parts and the string, so it reaches like 80 to 90 FPS. And I think that's really great because it's such a great intro level project. If you have access to 3D printing and some elastic, that's literally all you need to build this blaster that, you know, hits harder than an elite blaster. And we've talked on the podcast before about, you've talked about this a bunch, Vial, about the importance of easy projects, easy build projects, and easy mod projects. That are well documented,
especially for 3D printing, because you know, we have to start somewhere for 3D printing, and if it's got, you know, either little to no support structures, if it's easy to go together, you know, it just shows a much better design. And actually, I've seen the test ones that you know, Bruce has been putting up, those of that particular one, and it of the nail clipper, it looks really good. I'm not really into to stringers like that, to be honest, like any elastic powered ones. But I really liked this one. It really looked good. And it's like I said, especially the ones that I've been seeing the images of. So I might have to try printing my own, especially if it doesn't take hardware, because that really makes your entry cost really cheap.
I think the only hardware would be the band itself, wouldn't it?
Basically, yeah.
That's what it says, is that it's only the band. And
you can cut a band off like a backpack. Actually, no, don't cut it off your backpack. You use that.
Well, yeah, but like, were you talking about like the ones that go across to like hold your shoes on the outside that like crisscross around? I mean, like that's pretty much the same material as far as
I use that to hold a skateboard once.
Yeah, there you go. Well, yeah. But you can put skateboards in them. I want to print one myself, but sadly, I only have a Prusa Mini, and the height requirement is 195. I mentioned this in the show. The height requirement is 195 millimeters for the main body part of the blaster. So even though there's a shorter barrel version of the blaster, that does not decrease the overall print space needed, because that's not the largest part. So hopefully I can get someone to print one for me at some point and send it my way.
Now, this partially ties back into the whole thing of accessibility. Now, my designs, Silly's designs, Slug's designs, and Dan of Orion Blaster's designs all will fit on a bed as small as 150 millimeters cubed.
That's super important. That's super important.
Like, it's fantastic that we have people designing. And this isn't a knock against anybody. Hell no. Like, these are fantastic designs, and I don't know how to design monobody stuff like that. Yeah. If you can, that's awesome. But not everybody's going to be able to print those things.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, the reason that most of my things just fit on those size printers is because that's all I had.
Right.
But the fact that it lowers the cost of entry is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of, when we say accessibility, there's a lot of different things that means. And one of them definitely is access to the actual build equipment. And printer size. I mean, like, you know, I'm pretty serious about this hobby. I only have a little tiny printer. Every time I'm going to print something, I don't even have a home for my printer. So every time I'm going to print something, I have to like clear a table somewhere and make sure like the temperature is going to be reasonably controlled in that area and like clear that space and set the printer up each time I'm going to work on a new project. Cause I have a lot of space, but I've never really found a home for the printer. For a while, it was like in our like library sort of space in our house, or like study thing, and then I moved it back out to the garage, and it's just kind of all over the place. And that's just the situation sometimes.
I have four printers in my bedroom. I don't have that much space in my bedroom anymore. Two of the printers are actually stacked on top of each other, and one of them is sitting off to the side. One of them is just a pile of parts on the floor because it's dead.
Incredible.
I trip over it every night when I get up to go to the bathroom.
Amazing.
Like I'm not kidding. Like that's not funny, and I should probably do something about that.
Well, and I loved Bruce's video about the blaster. It has printers running in the background for the entire video, and at some point he turns and you can see them all there working. And that's just the 3D printer life, I guess. I am not fully committed. I don't know what your situation looks like, Vile. I don't know how often you're running your printers.
I haven't run my. I have to get a new. My new computer up and running because my slicer only works on newer operating systems, and I'm still running a very old rig. But I have a printer on the floor. I have a printer above my mega desk, and you heard that right. It's a mega desk. I have a printer outside. Two printers
outside.
You
got to upgrade to the mega XL desk at this point. It's 2023.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. Wait, what the fuck is that? An Ender 5?
Yeah, I do have a MegaDesk, but yeah, where my streams, my recordings take place, there's literally an A350 Snapmaker sitting up literally above where that camera is. Like, I have a lot of printers as well, but it's I'm in the same boat where I don't really have room for a lot of them either. I'm trying to, you know, find space
for
them at this point.
We have an artist rendering here of the Out of Darts printer zone.
Is this just a shit post you intend to have edited in post?
I'll be sending you all these images later.
I'm making notes because I got to keep track of all the stuff.
I haven't even scrolled down. Oh my God, there's so much crap.
As we hit the 2-hour mark on this podcast recording, Taffy, I want to thank you profusely for coming on the podcast. This was extremely fun. It was so much fun to have.
Thank you profusely for listening to all the bull crap that's been spewing out of my mouth nonstop. I'm the reason that this podcast is so long.
It's so good to hear these details from you, because like I can look at the red herring and I can go it looks like this is the case, and like, oh, I'm excited about this because it kind of looks like this. But to hear you actually say like, this was my concept behind it, this is why I did it this way, and this is why I'm excited about it, and just to hear you be excited about it is really, really special.
What I'm really excited to do is, so I did this for the Skewer. It is the destructive testing video. It was a video I made. It had fart music in it, which was easily the best part of the video.
Incredible.
I was just beating the shit out of a Skewer, and then eventually I hurled it off the stairs and then dumped the broken guts onto my bed. And then I messaged Silver Fox, as a joke, and I was like, I got video footage of me testing the new RAM base. And he sent me a new one. And then he sent me a photo of him about to block me.
Oh my God. Well, okay, so here's my question. Where can people see your videos? Where can people find you? Where can people find out about what you're working on?
I don't know.
Well,
your YouTube.
what is your YouTube? Where can people find skewers? Where can people find and get skewers? We already know, of course, Silver Fox Industries is where the parts for the red herring will be available. I know that your GitHub is where the this is how pluggables always works on this. I always ask people for their pluggables and they go, including Jolt and Vile, and then I list off all of their pluggables. So that's fine. This is par for the course. I know that your GitHub is where people can find the red herring files.
The GitHub will have the sling files, the skewer files, other crap. I'm also probably going to make a repository exclusively for some of my favorite shitposts, just because I think that'd be pretty funny.
Fabulous.
And nobody can stop me. It's not like they can ban me from my own GitHub.
Well, we will definitely have a link to your GitHub and a link to your YouTube down in the description of this on our YouTube. And if the podcast gets approved anywhere else, it'll be there as well. Vile, what do you got going on?
I've got more integration work that I'm doing over on Twitch, which I do stream Fridays and Saturdays, 12 to 8 p.m. Pacific, which is at twitch.tv/vile_mods. You can also check me out on my Instagram and or YouTube at Vile Mods as well. I don't know underscore on those. Those are primarily where you see me working on stuff.
Sweet. And Jolt, as always?
You can find me on YouTube, JoltKing627. Uploading
fabulous.
Bi-weekly at the moment with shorts.
That's that's right. And you can also find Jolt on TikTok. And and IKT, of course, generally go by Family Foam Sport in the Nerf world. You can find me at Family Foam Sport on YouTube, on TikTok, and on Instagram to some degree. I also do all the music for this podcast. I do a lot of music content as at Kinetic Turtle on Twitch and YouTube and other places. And so please.
You did all the music. Sorry, you did all the music except for
the chances that I will actually play that melody rather than using the existing version, possibly on a synthesizer that sounds basically like the original, is relatively high, because that would actually be easier for me than trying to isolate the sample. Anyway,
well, you can't just use my voice.
No, I might do that also.
Just edit that bit that you did right there back into the rest of the footage.
Or maybe I'll run it through a vocoder or something. We'll see.
Yes, vocode it.
Yeah. JK, this is a 2-hour podcast, and I'm going to do as little editing as I possibly humanly can. That is the reality.
Okay, just a heads up. You're going to have to. Okay, but you know, this in hindsight is really stupid. You got Rickrolled. Future, you got Rickrolled. I'm not going to tell you where. You're going to have to find it. It was sometime when Vile was talking.
What?
I'm just going to da 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 da. All right, I think we did a podcast. I think we're done here. this is crumbling rapidly. Thanks for being on.
All in a day's work. Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down. Never gonna run around, desert you, or hurt you. If you're hearing this later, you have been Rickrolled.